Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
In today's business landscape, organizations are increasingly reliant on a wide array of SaaS applications to drive operations, enhance productivity, and enable cross-functional collaboration. And go-to-market is filled with these applications, ranging from sales engagement to conversational intelligence to marketing automation to forecasting to customer success. However, with the abundance of technology comes the challenge of managing it effectively. Without a robust governance framework, applications can become siloed, costly, and misaligned with business goals, ultimately limiting the impact for organization success. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Revenue Lounge podcast. I am your host, Randy Likas. In this episode, we will dive into what it takes to build a governance framework that doesn't just keep IT operations in check, but also aligns technology investments with strategic objectives. And joining me today is Bill Vanderwall. Bill is a VP of Business Applications with experience at both large and small companies. He has deep experience with SaaS applications and cross-functional business process solutions, including business intelligence and analytics. His experience lies in aligning technology to business strategy. Bill, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Randy. It's great to see you, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So, Bill, maybe you can walk us through your background and your career journey.
Sure. I've been working in IT for a long time. I started my career at Accenture. I was then Anderson Consulting, and I got an opportunity to go consult at a small company called Netscape, just as it was taking off, and they offered me a job. So I went and I managed Oracle Financials, and then ended up managing all their applications at some point. From there, went to several other Bay Area companies, Williams-Sonoma, Riverbed Technologies. Spent 7 years at Marketo. I joined, built IT from scratch when my boss and I got there. We built it and went through pre-IPO, IPO with private equity, and then sale to Adobe. Then went to Malwarebytes, where I was in charge of applications, and then Cision, which is a large PR marketing and software company.
And Bill, you and I were talking about this a little bit in the green room. You know, I've been selling SaaS solutions for a long time, and what's been amazing to me is a lot of times, even 5 years ago, even as recently as 2 or 3 years ago, the business would buy the software and we wouldn't have business systems involved much at all. What I'm seeing, though, is a big shift in that, right? A lot of the deals that we're doing now certainly have IT and business applications represented in those conversations. So we'd love to understand from you what the significance is of building a governance framework and aligning kind of with the trend that we're seeing for SaaS business applications. How does that framework lay the foundation for impactful decision-making and execution?
Sure. Well, I definitely hear what you're saying about the proliferation of applications, SaaS applications, and it makes it challenging because it is easy to go out and just manage your own if it's a small enough piece. But I would say at two of my companies, both Marketo and Malwarebytes, where I got there, we had SaaS applications being managed by the business and really needed to step in and provide some IT professional experience, especially as you looked at data and processes that flowed from end to end. So it was really became very disjointed. The data didn't flow nice. There's a lot of manual steps. So having IT involved is great, but we don't want to slow people down either. So that's where good governance is, can create a balance there. So at my last couple of companies, we've created a governance structure where we really at the C level on a quarterly basis, prioritize the top projects and the top priorities cross-functionally. So everybody at the C level sits there and horse trades between themselves to fight for the IT resources. And then we go out and tackle things. And if something comes up in one of the business units has wanted to go buy something, sometimes as IT will get involved, we'll help with the purchase. We may or may not need to be involved in an implementation, depending on what it is, but at least we know about it and have, helped select it so that it does flow and data and process-wise.
And so what makes up that governance framework? If you think about the different components that make that up, what do you typically have involved in there?
Yeah, I mean, where it's been most successful for me is there's been sort of two levels of governance. There's been the C-level governance I just talked about, the quarterly steering committee. And so this worked really well for me. Our CFO was really good about, we had a 3-year plan, a 3-year strategy. is really good about letting the senior leadership team know what that looked like. And then from there, we went into an annual operating plan. And so that was used to govern how much money we were going to spend. But then how to use that money was where it became interesting. And that's where, you know, the C-level executive committee just sort of said, here's our top priorities for this year. Here's what we want you guys to focus on. You know, you tell us how to best apply your resources to help us with the systems piece of it. And so we would go back and forth. And every once in a while, fortunately, I've been in places where it's been very collaborative at the C-level, where the C-level generally agrees, like, yes, that's a priority right now. We've got to increase retention. So we've got to really focus on our customer success software, for example. So there hasn't been too much fighting. There's been alignment at like what's really most important for the company, and then we can align around that. But then, so that's the top level. But one level below that, often I've had operating committees, and those meet on more of a monthly basis. So that's how, like, how are the projects doing? Are there things that don't need to go to the C-level for approval that we just need to just go get them done? So we have an operational committee. We meet like on to go over project status, and we go over lower priority things that don't need C-level approval. For instance, if we went out and the business wanted to get Gong, some sort of plug into Salesforce, that didn't take much IT resources, maybe a little bit, but what we would do is we would help with the selection so that we'd make sure like this fits within our overall architecture and that it will sync, and then we'll give an estimate for how much it will take to actually set it up. But then, you know, we can go and set that up and then the business can go administer it. Like, that's fine. So we would have an operational level committee that meet on a monthly basis to go over enhancements, smaller priorities, smaller projects, things that didn't necessarily need to go to the C-level.
Got it. Okay. And then oftentimes we'll hear, and it used to be much more sort of many years ago, but the whole buy versus build decision comes up quite often. Typically, where is that? Is that involved at the strategic level or is that more at the operational level? It's a buy versus build decision. What are the different factors you think about when you decide that?
Yeah, I think that the landscape has tipped quite a bit towards buy over the last 10 years, just because there are so many point solutions that plug into your bigger platforms like a Salesforce or a NetSuite or, you know, something like that. And so the cost to build something now, if there's another group who's investing in R&D to make it successful, is really, I mean, it really makes more sense to buy these days. There are still instances, especially in engineering or product-led companies, where the engineering groups might want to go build something. And then it is a strategic decision, usually between the CIO and the CTO, that's figuring out like, where does it make sense? Where I come down is if it's generally something that needs to be a core competency of the business and part of their product strategy, then it makes sense to build. But otherwise, if it's serving a business operations function, it really makes sense to buy these days.
Where does the alignment with the overall strategic goals of the company or the business outcomes, where does that typically come up? Is that at both levels or is it more at the operational level?
Both levels, but I would say that's a steering committee level conversation. Like I talked about Malwarebytes, where it was pretty successful. We did have strategic goals for the year, our five top goals for the year as a company, and that our annual operating plan, our AOP, was built around that. And so those are the things that we had aligned around. And we would say that, like, we need to, you know, get our retention from X to Y. And we would build a strategy that included both process and systems to try to get us there. And it was really at that level where we'll be measuring the outcomes here. We'll be looking at what our retention is, our gross retention, our net retention, and we'll see if we made our goals or not.
Early in the green room, we talked a little bit about this. And earlier in your career, I think there was an environment where you've had this really chaotic list of just IT demands and too many projects and not enough resources, right? For other folks who might be in a similar situation, what are some practical advice you'd give them in terms of setting up a governance model?
Yeah, when I got to Riverbed Technology, this is many years ago now, but when I got there, there was a list of about 270 items that they wanted the IT applications group to tackle. And they were just, so it was like a laundry list. And like, no sizing, like, everything from like change a field on a report to, you know, overhaul configure price quote. Everything was like all each one level on an Excel spreadsheet with. So what we really did is we triaged it. So first of all, we just did some, you know, rough grouping and sizing, said, you know, basically what are the themes that we're going after? Is this revenue driving? Is this efficiency? Is this, you know, kind of what category did this fall on? Can we group some of these together and make them into a project or a program? And then can we t-shirt size it in terms of effort and then outcome, like impact? So we did that first. We brought that back to, we created the executive steering committee because it didn't exist when I got there. We went back to that group, said, here's what we think our priorities are based on what we've heard from you. Is this right? And then we tweak and then come up with our plan. And so we had our priorities, we had our plan, we had things organized into kind of workable chunks, and we went forward from there.
You know, Bill, I want to ask you a question. So I have a strategic account that I've been focusing in for a while, and they hired a new CEO a couple of quarters ago. And on the last earnings call, he made a really interesting statement. He said, I think we went through a period where if there was a SaaS application out there, we bought it, right? And in the spirit of trying to get more efficient operationally and save on some investment costs, he really wanted to, you know, align, and he was leaning on his business systems team to think through what's critical to the business versus nice to have. Curious, what's the process that you walk through if you're in a similar situation and you've got just this, you know, all these different applications? How do you work with your internal stakeholders to say, you bought this for a reason because you thought you probably solved this problem, right? But we've just got way too much sprawl across us. We need to scale it back. What does that conversation look like with the internal stakeholders?
Yeah, I mean, having a lot of applications isn't necessarily in itself bad. I mean, one of my old coworkers used to say, it's like your phone. It's like, now that you have an iPhone, you put on a bunch of other applications and some of them work and some of them don't. Now, you have to pay for most of these. So there is a financial conversation here, but typically, at least an annual basis, usually maybe like a twice annual basis. In my past few companies, what we've done is we've tried to rationalize that list and just come up with like, okay, who's using, what's the list? How much are we spending? And then we've had some tools at my last couple of companies where we've actually like able to dive into usage, like actual usage to say like, how many people are really using this? Are they logging in? And then we try to be ahead of renewal cycles on these things. So you can say like, okay, you know, we've got three of these and they kind of do the same thing, but they're not exactly the same. Can we rationalize to one? You know, at Marketo, I had four survey tools. And so we said, it doesn't make sense, or do we want one survey tool that everybody aligns around? And we ended up doing that. We ended up going to one, although it was a top-end tool and it was a little more expensive. So there were like a few things that we just said, okay, you can still use a cheaper solution for that. But really our strategy is to build our expertise around this tool. And so it's usually a once, twice a year conversation to really rationalize spend and to measure usage.
So Bill, there's a really interesting trend in go-to-market software right now where a lot of what I would call companies that started out building a single product, right? Whether it were sales engagement or conversational intelligence or forecasting, whatever it might be. And there's this, been this big rush over the past, I say, 18 months to build each other's capabilities and to sort of that platform solution. And I understand the reason for that because companies want to consolidate costs. And if they can get a platform solution that does a lot, like that makes a lot of sense. Yet, I think a lot of times what the company did first is typically what they're best at, right? And as they've rushed to build these platforms, they're not necessarily best of breed. And so I'm curious, what's your perspective on that as far as looking at a platform tool as opposed to going best of breed? How do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm generally lean towards best of breed for that reason that you just said. They are trying to all expand their space, but they do, you know, one particular thing well. I'm most familiar with applications that plug into Salesforce. And so as long as it plugs into Salesforce, you can generally do best of breed because it still communicates with the mothership Salesforce platform. But there have been instances where, you know, it gets close enough and then there's like a efficiency of scale. It's just like easier to maintain, it costs less. And so that tipping point is, again, something hopefully 6 months before renewal, you're talking about and doing demos to see, okay, have they come far enough with conversational intelligence or whatever they're trying to do, AI features, whatever they're trying to do, have they come far enough along that now we can move to one solution and rationalize, or do we still want to keep our best of breed? And in most cases, I've seen keeping best of breed, but I have seen it go the other way a few times.
Yeah, for sure. Especially with budgets tightening up and everything else, it certainly is a consideration, but I think it just depends on the company. You mentioned AI. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's building it into their products. Everybody's excited about it. We often find, though, that when things get to legal, there's a lot of concern right now around AI right now. To what degree is the business systems team involved in those conversations to help legal understand risks and or best practices that guide the questions that they push back in like a contract?
It's two things. One is working with legal, and secondly, it's working with the vendor to understand, okay, what are you going to do with our data? Are you, we understand that you want to try to use our data to train your models. To what extent do we lose control of our data if we turn it over to you in that situation? And so I've had back and forth with between legal and the vendor where they've come to terms and say, like, okay, this is acceptable usage of our data, either through trying to isolate it or make it more anonymous. But there is a, that is a back and forth. And there are valid concerns right now about letting companies have access to your data in a way that could jeopardize your own security around that data. So this is a conversation that needs to happen right now, and but it's not black and white. So, you know, legal definitely wants to sometimes or risk wants to shut everything down, but there are some uses that are very valid and make sense. So it's a conversation.
Any advice that you might give, like if for people that are going to those conversations, how to bridge that conversation between the vendor and legal, that best practices or ways in which you could make it a little bit less
Yeah,
friction?
best practices is try to get those two groups on the phone together at the same time. Because I've had it where it's gone back and forth for a few weeks where, you know, both vendor and legal are dug in, but then we do a phone call, get the right sales engineers on the line, go over things and come up with a reasonable compromise. So it's really brokering a meeting. I think the challenge is getting somebody in legal at risk who can understand the technology well enough to really be, feel comfortable with what they're doing with the data. But in my last company, there were definitely people in legal and security who had those skills, so that was helpful.
Excuse me for a moment. Getting back to the governance framework for a moment, I'm curious, when you think about things that SaaS applications that people are looking to buy, whether they're departmental or whether they're cross-departmental, right? And the stakeholders that it's impacting, where does that play in the framework? Like, obviously, if it's going to impact more departments, it might be a little bit more strategic, right? I'm curious, where does that fall within the framework? Or is that a component of the framework in terms of like overall organizational impact? And probably the more departments it involves, the more impact it's going
It
to
is
have.
part of
So
the
I'm curious
it
to
is part of the framework, and it's part of both this, you know, often it can be below the C-level steering level where some of these things come up, but that operational level, trying to have more participants across the organization is pretty key, because if it's just me and the controller and the VP of RevOps, like we cover like 80%, but then often, especially when you get into things like project management tools where like engineering has one, marketing has one, they're potentially different. So I think getting together and just trying to have representatives from each of those functional units in your operational committee, it's pretty important to hear about those things. And then to ask the question, like, okay, if these guys are using Asana, these guys are using Monday, can you both use the same thing or can't you? And then it's another one, it's sort of software vendor evaluation to say like, yes, we can, or no, that doesn't make any sense for us. These guys have a marketing calendar, or these guys, you know, these guys, you know, integrate with Jira, so you need them in products. So, you know, it's those kind of conversations just to try to justify. Like it's okay to have multiple if it's justified. But that's that exercise of trying to justify. And then just to listen and learn, like what's happening in the rest of the organization so things don't get too siloed.
What role does ROI play in the decision? Vendors always paint a rosy picture in terms of what their ROI could be, and you can't have a generic ROI model. It's really got to be custom there. So curious to get your input on what you think of vendor-provided ROI, and if you do some things differently, like how do you build that case internally, and how is it different than maybe what the vendor provides?
Yeah, vendor provided ROIs, just they're good directionally. And often I've done work with vendors who've had business value teams have come in and really have understood the right kind of value that you're providing. Like we're really going to streamline billing. It's going to do these, you know, three things. It's going to eliminate some of this manual effort. To get to the ROI is tougher. There are often a lot of soft dollars in there. And I think you just need to take a look at what dollars are hard, what dollars are soft, how much of a fudge factor we do we attribute to those soft dollars, and then trying to say at the gut, is this worth it? I think when I was at some of the tech companies that I've been at, they definitely operate more by a little bit more by feel, even at the executive level versus hard, you know, needing to see a hard dollar ROI. At some other companies, they've had to see that hard dollar ROI, and that's been tougher to get projects going, and often some strategic projects just don't get done because it's too hard to prove the ROI up front. So I think it's all about like how much budget really is it consuming and how much risk does a company want to take, you know, because they don't always work out.
What are your thoughts on a lot of the analyst firms, Gartner, Forrester, have their sort of own spin on it, right? Gartner's is total cost of ownership. Forrester's is total economic impact, where they build like a composite organization and look at the benefits and build that out. Is that any better than a vendor-provided ROI?
I think the vendor-provided ROIs get a lot more specific in terms of, you know, because often they'll apply resources to really help understand, like, what's the specific business problem we're trying to solve in your instance. Things like total cost of ownership are great and good considerations, but also time to value is really critical too, because if we're really looking at something that's going to drive efficiency or drive revenue, we want it to get it pretty quickly. And if it comes to fruition and drives revenue, then that takes care of total cost of ownership in the long run. One of my leaders at one of my last companies is just like, a little bit of revenue growth can go a long way to cover a lot of expenses. So you really got to focus on time to value and what's it really bringing to the organization.
Thinking back to the organizations that you worked at that didn't necessarily have a governance model in place, and you're introducing a concept like this, there's a lot of change that sort of goes into that, right? They probably weren't told no a whole lot. And now we're saying, look, we have to have some more structure. So I'd love to get your perspective in terms of like how to manage that change. And what are maybe some practical or tactical recommendations you would give in terms of how do you manage different stakeholders that both at the executive level and I think at the operational level to say, hey, no, this is the way that we're going to be looking at things now. And it's not like it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, quick wins are important to build some trust. If you're introducing a new governance model, it's like, well, why should I trust these guys instead of just go do it myself? So some quick wins are important, especially take a look at data flow, fixing some data flow problems, fixing some process flow problems, giving the organization capabilities they didn't have. Those are important in building trust. And then we try not to be too heavy-handed, too draconian. Just like, you know, at Marketo, there was a different group who managed some of the support things, and we let them be on their own for a long time because they were good at communicating with my team, but they were pretty efficient and they were very focused on the solutions. And so we just said, like, we're not going to force you guys to come be part of IT, but we definitely want that communication line to be open. We want to be planning together. And it actually ended up being a pretty good partnership, and it wasn't a lot of infighting and politics. It was more like we have the same objective and we have to be on the same page, but it doesn't matter if it sits in your org, sits in my org. So I think those are a couple ways to manage the changes. Don't be too black and white and build trust and build wins.
Yeah. I want to pivot the conversation a little bit, not so much on governance framework, but something we see very often, which is data quality. And there's every organization we speak with always has a data quality issue to some degree. And I'm speaking more in the sense of the customer data, like Salesforce and things like that. And it amazes me how people just learn to live with bad data because they got to operate the business anyway. So what role does business systems play in improving data quality? Is it somebody on your team that's responsible for that? And you would just love to get your perspective in terms of like why people aren't necessarily, why data quality isn't higher on the list as opposed to just to learning to live with it.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard, and it can be, like, depending on how you design it, it can be time-consuming. And if you make an SDR search for an account before they create one, is it really going to slow them down? Can you provide tools to provide better data governance? Or is it really going to become more effort for not much gain? So I think you have to really figure out what are the important things that you have to build on the front end and build processes and governance around versus the, you know, okay, maybe that can be a little messy there. Maybe that's okay. When I was at Malwarebytes, we had a lot of data quality problems and we fixed some in Salesforce. We fixed some in the processes. We definitely did some work in tandem with RevOps where we, you know, let's have ZoomInfo help us and really cleanse some of this data, harmonize it. We can use solutions to eliminate duplicates. We can, you know, merge things, and that worked. But then ultimately, we also created a data warehouse, and we did some transformations in the data warehouse. So that was another way to improve the data through as we, you know, reported it out. Sometimes we would loop some of those changes back into the source systems, but sometimes we wouldn't. And it depended on like how important was it, or how easily could we harmonize it in the data lake and in the reporting layers.
Yeah, that's definitely something we're seeing as well, is focus less on it being in the CRM. If we can put it in the data lake, we can solve a lot of problems. And certainly, I think a trend that we're seeing more and more companies leaning into, which is making sure we can get it into Snowflake or whatever application that they use. Is that something that you see, if you think maybe the next 12, 24 months, how important is the data lake, you think, in the next couple of years? And will more companies be moving in that
direction? I'd expect so. I mean, it was really transformational when I was at Malwarebytes, and at Cision, it was pretty transformational too. It really can provide a lot of insight that it's hard to get out of a Salesforce reporting layer. And because you can just marry it with all kinds of other data. Yeah. And it's easy to transform with, there's tools that make it easy to do transformations. And it really can be transformative. And it allowed us, at Malwarebytes, it allowed us to get to a bunch of business SaaS metrics that we just didn't have before we put in our data lake. So it was really powerful.
Yeah. A lot of companies right now are building like data share components to be able to share the data over. And some companies are actually starting to build like Snowflake native apps, right? What are your thoughts on that? Is there a bunch of a preference or an advantage to one over the other?
That's really interesting, because at my last company, we had several Salesforce instances and we needed to harmonize a bunch of data across the instances. And there was some architectural decisions to make to say, do we do this in the data lake and use our own transformations, or do we start to rely on vendors who are now coming up with their own harmonization schemes, especially using AI and other, you know, external data? And I would say that we weren't quite far enough along to really come to a conclusion there. So we were just evaluating. One of the tools that we used to try to harmonize some of the data in the back end was from a company that ended up then going out of business. So I think it's really an evolving space right now, but there's a lot of promise in this space. So again, I think it's just an analysis, like what should we do on our own? And this is a good build or buy conversation, because there's not a ton of ready-made solutions out there yet, but they're coming.
Yeah. You bring up an interesting point, which is newer vendors who are maybe doing some really innovative things and wanted to bring that into the business versus more established vendors who have been around a while. So there's risk, yeah, right? They could go out of business. We'd love to hear your perspective in terms of how is vendor maturity, if you will, how established they are, how important is that? And does that actually feed into the government's framework?
Yes, it does. And we had a software selection process at a couple of companies that I worked with. That was definitely one of the considerations. It's like, we did, like, how long have they been in business? What's their executive team look like? What's their size of company and revenues? Ran a D&B check on them. That was part of the selection model to say, are these guys mature or are they just working out of their garage? And that did make a difference to us in what we selected.
Yeah. If there was a really, really cool technology that solved a problem that they didn't have, but they were young in their career, would you give them a chance, or is that too much risk to actually take on for a large
business? Depends on the solution and how critical the solution is. I would say it's probably, if it's really critical to revenue generation and to our own numbers as a company, then I would say it's too risky. But if it's an area where it provides some efficiencies, or maybe it's an area where you can take a little risk, it just depends what it is. Yeah. It really depends what the solution is.
Yeah. So if I play that back to you, if it's mission critical to the business, it's going to be a little bit too much risk. But if it's something a little bit more tangential that could provide some efficiencies or some benefits, it might be worth it.
Exactly.
It might kind of reclaim.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. Bill, let's transition the conversation to what we call the lightning round, which is a little bit less professional and a little bit more personal. As somebody who has grown up consulting world, built the organizations, and now being head of business systems, what do you really like about your job? What's your favorite part of your job?
I love seeing teams grow. I love seeing people get confidence in what they're doing. So I'm a big believer in situational leadership. Sometimes if are just learning something, I may need to lean in and really help them. But if they're competent, but then maybe not confident, that's a place where, you know, just trying to build up that confidence so they can just go and take off in their careers. That I love to see that. I love to see people who grow in their confidence, they get a couple wins under their belt and really build their partnerships with the business and then start to really provide value.
Now, Bill, there's always a flip side to that question, which is that least favorite part, or said a different way, like what's really, really hard about
telling? Sometimes you have to tell people no, or tell people to wait. This is part of the governance. Yeah. Like part of the governance is there's people who just don't get what, and that can be really frustrating to some of the business groups. And it can lead to some groups just saying, okay, well, we're just going to go by it ourselves. Hopefully there's some enforcement at the C-level governance level to say, well, in the spirit of this governance, you can't just go out and do your own thing. Because then we'll prove it as an IT project, then we'll go out and work together on it. But you know, telling people to wait is hard. We've had a couple times in my career where there's groups that, like an HR group or a legal group, who just like, hey, we're never going to compete for those dollars based on like revenue generation, but it's what we do is important. And so we've allocated budget You know, we just said, okay, we're not going to put you through all the governance hurdles. We're going to give you X budget per year to spend on systems. As long as you live within that, we're going to just going to give you a piece of it. And you don't have to fight for it.
So for in those instances where organizations or stakeholders say, I'm just going to go buy it myself, if it requires to tie into existing systems, you still have veto power,
yeah, right. Well, yes, but if they've already signed the contract, then you have to go. Yeah, I mean, it's like you got to go do it. But that is a case where it's like that feedback loop to. And I've had some of those instances where there's been conversations back with that CEO to say like, hey, that's not really the way that we want to do these things. Like, we want to be a part. Please just invite us up front. We want to be part of that selection. We want to make sure it fits. And we do want to make sure that it's really a priority. If it's really a priority, then we'll go do it. But we need to, sometimes it's been some of those conversations. Okay, we understand why you went and did that, but please next time go through the proper cycle.
Yeah.
Be a good corporate citizen. Yeah.
With the hindsight experience, hindsight's 2020, and what advice would you give to maybe your younger self as you've grown in your career?
Yeah, I would say one is to listen, just be a good listener. And then two is, you know, really work hard to develop cross-functional relationships. That's, you know, really the key is to, and it's become harder in a remote environment where we're more remote, we're more hybrid, we're less in the office. It's more important to really make sure you have some proactive time with the business partners and really try to build those operational committees that aren't as organic when you're not sitting in the same place.
For those who are maybe thinking about building a more structured, rigorous governance framework, what advice would you give them to turn to for inspiration or ideas? Like maybe analyst firms, maybe there's some books that you'd recommend. Just curious if there's any resources that you might leave the audience with as we wrap up the episode.
It's a good question. I think a lot of it is just common sense. Part of it is it's trying to go from what IT is often viewed as a cost center. And we really want it to be business partners. So I think part of building that governance is just to say, you guys are in charge of turning up and down the levers of spending that control, like what we can deliver. But we want to be the best business partners we can be. We don't want to just be a cost center. We really want to understand, like, what are your business objectives? We want to be involved in those conversations up front. So don't come to us with a solution design already in place. Come to us with, what business problem are you trying to tackle? Involve us up front as business partners. Let us help develop the design for the solution. Go pick the solutions. And I think that's a much more successful way. And so part of that is just building the skills to do really good business analysis and have good, like in IT, having people who really can understand the business concepts that aren't just technicians.
Yeah. Last question I have for you is, any advice you'd give to the vendor world, right? So in using the example I talked about before, where a lot of times apps were being purchased and not having to have IT involvement, businesses just buying them. And as IT is getting involved, I think a lot of times people will the hair on their neck will start to raise up. Like, I thought I had this deal done, and you know, IT is going to come in and muddy the waters for us here. But I think that's a negative way of looking at things. I think IT can actually be, if you can proactively reach out to them and partner with them on things, it might actually help you. So I just love to understand, what advice might you give to the vendor world who's maybe selling to the business, but how can they partner better and more closely with IT?
Yeah, the low code, no code stuff is brilliant these days. I really do love to have applications where the business can just go operate it. I don't have to be involved in everything you're doing, as long as I understand, like, what are your inputs? What are your outputs? Does it connect in a way that makes sense with our overall architecture? But I love it when marketing ops team can go and do their own stuff and don't need me involved. That's awesome. I would just say continue to invest in ways to make that easy from a low code, no code standpoint.
Yeah, great advice. Well, that's a wrap. So Bill, I just want to say thank you very much. We have a lot of marketing, sales, and success leaders on this podcast, but I think you brought a really interesting perspective to this call that our audience is going to really enjoy. So thank you so much. That's it for the Revenue Lounge. Look forward to speaking with everybody next time. So have a great day.
Thanks, Randy.